Morning, everybody, on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Hope you had a nice Thanksgiving weekend. In about 20 minutes, Officer William Porter, 26 years old, a three-year veteran of the police department here in Baltimore, goes on trial in the Clarence Mitchell Courthouse on Calvert Street in Baltimore. His is the first of six trials of officers charged in the death of Freddie Gray last April. Officer Porter is charged with involuntary manslaughter and second-degree assault, as well as misconduct in office. He has pleaded not guilty to those charges. Joining me this morning to talk about what we might expect in this trial, which is being closely watched here in Baltimore and well beyond, are two very experienced lawyers. Edward Smith is an attorney in private practice. He has served in the office of the state's attorney, and he has argued cases in front of the Supreme Court of the United States. David Jaros is an associate professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law, whose scholarly focus is on criminal law and criminal procedure and the like. Gentlemen, welcome.
Oh, good morning, Tom.
We're glad to have you here. So, Ed Smith, in order to prove a conviction for manslaughter, to get a conviction for manslaughter, what does the state have to prove in the case of Officer Porter?
Actually, there are two types of manslaughter in Maryland. There's voluntary and involuntary manslaughter. Voluntary, of course, being meaning to do your act. That's the scienter necessary to find voluntary manslaughter, death of a human being, which is not premeditated. Involuntary manslaughter, reckless disregard, that is what is needed to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, the standard of proof in any criminal case.
Mm-hmm. So, David Jaros, the state has to prove that Officer Porter could have, this is a woulda, coulda, shoulda kind of situation, he could have done things to prevent the injuries that led to Mr. Gray's death.
That seems likely. That seems, everything is speculation here. We haven't seen the state's evidence. They haven't been totally open about what theory they have for conviction. But most likely it's going to be something along the lines of that the officer was aware that he had a duty to act and that he failed to do that duty, knowing that there was a high probability that could lead to Freddie Gray's death.
Okay. We should remind folks that Officer Porter was called onto the scene in the middle of this situation where Mr. Gray was being transported from where he was originally picked up to Baltimore Police Headquarters. Ed Smith, what do you make of the decision by Judge Williams not to sequester the jurors in this case?
Well, Tom, sequestration is a very unique and not often used tenet of the law. It requires one to believe that the jury may be prejudiced in some way or there may be some tampering with the jury. And sequestration, I think I've only had it done in two trials in 43 years in the law. So I think the decision by Judge Williams, until you find out if you can get a fair jury, which is what's going on this morning, was not in any way unique or was not something that could not be anticipated. Mm-hmm. And Judge Williams is a very good judge, by the way. Been in front of him many times.
Yeah, a lot of folks speak very highly of Judge Williams. David Jaros, I mean, if the jury isn't sequestered, there is a gag order. I mean, the judge has ordered the defense and the prosecuting attorneys not to discuss the case. But the jurors are going to be, they're going to at least have access to all the chatter of people like us and people on Facebook and people in the media, national and local.
You know, it is a concern. There is a presumption that we typically make, which is that jurors will listen to what the judge tells them. And the judge will instruct them to stay away from the media, to stay off of Twitter, to not go on the web. And the presumption is that jurors will listen to them. I think that the fact that the judge is not choosing to sequester at least improves the chance that we'll be able to draw a jury here in Baltimore.
The judge has also allowed that the jury, Ed Smith, will be anonymous. So folks will not at least immediately know their names. What do you make of that? Is that also
unusual? I think
unusual?
It's a good move. People tend to be frozen just like a batter when you kind of put them out there. People are very excited about this. Some are protesting even as we speak downtown. And people can put pressure on others who are not familiar with the jury system and who come just to do their duty. So it's a good move not to have them revealed at this point. Of course, anybody in the courtroom will be able to see who they are once the jury is seated. But right now, I think he's being very cautious, as he should be, That is Judge Williams.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily the case that the jurors will remain anonymous forever. It's just that at the moment they're not.
That is absolutely correct, and we have a very weak system of ferreting out jurors here in Maryland. We don't get to question them individually like they do in California and other states, and so a judge just gives questions to the jurors that defendants and the prosecutors give them, and they are asked whether or not they could be fair. Through a series of questions, usually no more than about 26 to 30 questions.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. That's Ed Smith. He's an attorney in private practice. We're also joined by David Jarosz from the University of Baltimore School of Law. And David Jarosz, I was fascinated by some wording in one of the motions that the defense made, a pretrial motion, in which they said, quote, "It's possible, indeed probable, that an acquittal of Officer Porter will lead to further civil unrest." And then he talks about, you know, then this had to do with sequestration and with the anonymity of the jurors. Is the fact that there's always the possibility of more violence given in the eventuality of an acquittal of any of these officers, is that going to be something that the prosecution will use as part of their defense strategy or the defense? I mean, that seems crazy.
No, I don't think that'll be a part of either the prosecution or defense strategy for trying to achieve a guilty verdict or an acquittal. It becomes relevant in the picking of the jury. There's sort of two sides to the argument that the defense has made in terms of why the case should be moved out of Baltimore. The first, which is a relatively weak one, is that there's been media exposure to the case and the jurors have sort of pre-decided the issues based on publicity. The weakness in that argument, which was pointed out in a hearing, is that we live in the age of the internet, and so the entire country has been able to see all of this publicity. If you move this to Howard County, the same people read the same stuff off the web. So that's not as strong an argument. The second argument, though, is that jurors may be concerned that they are returning to the same community that may see violence based on their verdict. And if that could affect their verdict, that is an issue for a question of whether or not the case should be tried in Baltimore, and that will be something the judge explores today in the next few days, picking the jury.
Mm-hmm. And Ed Smith, it's not completely untenable that the trial might eventually be moved. I mean, the judge has said, we're going to try to pick a jury here in Baltimore, and if for some reason we can't get an unbiased jury, we might consider moving it.
Absolutely. The personal right of the defendants to receive a fair trial is well embedded in Anglo-Saxon law. And if, through the process, they get 200-300 people to come in today and everybody's heard of the case and people have developed already predisposed opinions about what should be done, then the court still has the right, under the statute, which requires removal to a jurisdiction of less impact, is the way the statute reads, along with the chief judge of the Court of Appeals and of the administrative judge, Judge Pearson here in Baltimore City, then that can and will be done. Mm-hmm. Somerset County is a favorite because they are a jurisdiction of lesser impact across the bridge. Or up in Western Maryland, that is another possibility. Oakland and up in other counties where there's not as much at stake, because the boiling point here, unfortunately, in Baltimore is an emotional one. It's not one that's made of people who are being deliberate and who believe in the rule of law and the common sense which people have to look at these things to determine exactly where they should fall. The justice system will take care of it eventually, and as lawyers, we have to have faith in that fact.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, David Jarosz, in terms of an appeal, the possibility of appeal, I mean, Judge Williams is going to be very scrutinized very, very closely throughout this entire thing, because when he makes certain rulings on certain things, like, for example, his ruling about whether or not Mr. Porter's previous interactions with Freddie Gray are going to be relevant and can be discussed at the trial. These things are crucial to how this case is going to proceed.
They are very important. And I think that raises an interesting issue about the case, which is we have to remember that this is the trial against Officer Porter. This is not all of the issues that are raised by the Freddie Gray case. Officer Porter comes along and becomes part of the scene after Freddie Gray is chased, after he is seized. All those questions about, was it appropriate for them to chase him? Was it appropriate for them to arrest him? None of those are sort of an issue in the case. Indeed, the quality of the ride that that Freddie Gray received is not an issue in Officer Porter's case.
Mm-hmm.
it remains a very real question about what we will ultimately explore in this particular criminal trial relative to all of these other issues.
And Ed Smith, you've argued cases in front of Judge Williams. Justin Fenton had an interesting piece in The Sun a day or two ago about the fact that Judge Williams has a background in prosecuting police when he was with the Justice Department. If you're a defense attorney, is that good news, bad news, neutral news? What do you think?
If you know Judge Williams, it's not an issue at all. We all wear two hats, and some of us wear many hats as lawyers. That's where how we're trained. And judges, who are supposed to be the best of us, as some would say, and some would say sometimes they're the worst of us, but at least in this particular instance, this judge is a person who can wear the hat and wear it well. He won't let it fall off so that justice will not be done. And if he makes a mistake, well, we're all human, and there is an appellate court who will straighten him out.
Yeah, so there's a system in place that's supposed to address all of these things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. Oftentimes, when it gets down to the nitty and the gritty of what has to be done, no one stands alone to make a decision over somebody's life that cannot be.
Just real quick as we finish up, Dave.
Yeah, just real quick to add to that, which is I think there's a point to which the system is not responding to everything related to this case. And I hope the public comes to recognize that
right.
This is raising all kinds of social and political issues that are not going to be resolved by the criminal
case.
Not in this case.
Okay, well, we will have you guys back to talk more about this as these many trials proceed. Thanks so much. Edward Smith is an attorney in private practice here in Baltimore. David Jaros, an assistant or associate professor rather at the University of Baltimore School of Law. Stay tuned to WIPR for complete coverage of all the trials in the Freddie Gray case. Kenneth Burns is at the courthouse today, and we'll be hearing from him later as well. And, of course, throughout all six trials. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up, Living Questions, our series on religion in the public sphere. That's up after a break for the news. First, here is Mr. Sterner.